y'all. Thanks for listening to Killer Queens.
Or KQ if you're nasty.
Welcome to the show where two 90s-loving country chicks gab about true crime and tell each other to talk to the hand because the face ain't listening. I'm Torella.
And I'm Tori.
And we're sisters who have always loved true crime and decided to turn that obsession into a show with a light take on the topic.
Kind of like diet true crime, it's all the flavor and fewer calories.
Now with our show, you'll get true crime, 90s nostalgia, and a few four-letter words sprinkled in.
Because I always say that Polly Pockets and true crime go together like peas and carrots.
Be sure to check out our case submission form on our website at killerqueenspodcast.com and follow us on social media and YouTube.
Now grab your Surge, your 3D Cool Ranch Doritos, and your kitten surprise, and let's get into the episode.
This episode contains discussion of child abuse, child sexual abuse, grooming, suicide, and domestic violence and abuse. Listener discretion is advised.
On July 20th, 2020, Gallatin, Tennessee 911 dispatchers received a phone call from Aaron Solomon. He told them that his 18-year-old son Grant was lying in a ditch at the bottom of a parking lot and that his Toyota Tacoma had backed over him and dragged him down the hill. When responders arrived, they found Grant alive, but only just. He was pronounced dead upon arrival at the hospital. Officers ruled the death an accident, and the case was closed. Grant's mother, Angie Solomon, knows something else happened in that parking lot that day, something that was the culmination of years of sexual, physical, emotional, and mental abuse, and she's going to do everything she can to prove that Aaron murdered her son.
Hey, you guys, welcome to Killer Queens. If you've never been here before, we want to give you just a little information about how the show is set up and what it's meant to accomplish. If you have been here before, welcome back. You can just use that handy skip ahead feature here if you want to.
We want to give a message to friends and family of the victims. We know that there may be someone involved in the case who might listen one day, and we want you to know that our intention is to only bring awareness to this case. And while we do use personal stories in some instances and our own humor in order to tell the story in a way that listeners can relate, we have the utmost respect for victims and their families.
We created Killer Queens to be a place where we can have open discussions about cases just like you would with friends. We are not investigators. We use information that is available to the public, such as documentaries, case files, and media coverage. Using this information, we intend to tell the story of what happened in each case that we cover. Now, will you agree with our interpretations or conclusions of each case? Well, heck no.
Mm-mm. We each approach cases from different perspectives, life experiences, and beliefs that we already have in place. And sometimes these differences are slight, yet they can be wide enough to cause divide and upset some of those listening. We do our best to present the facts as we find them in our research, but we do bring our own perspectives to the case. We understand that you will too. We want you to know that this is a safe space to discuss differences and opinions in a civilized manner. Our style may not be your personal preference, and if that's the case, we know you'll be able to find one of the many other shows out there to tell the story the way you want to hear it. We can be grown-ups about it if you can.
Now, if we are your cup of tea and you want even more KQ, you can join our Patreon and get access to our entire catalog of episodes ad-free and access to bonus episodes too. And I'll give you just a little hint if you're an ad skipper, but you still want the deals that we have from our sponsors each week, you can scroll down to the show notes and see what coupons we have available for you right down there.
But you didn't hear it from us.
That's a pro tip, but I'll deny ever sharing it.
Right. So all that being said, let's get into the story.
You guys, this is a rough stuff kind of case. Very rough. Mm-mm. And we know you guys like to be warned ahead of time if there's going to be any child abuse. And like, again, I know we already mentioned it in the trigger warnings, but we're not going to go into detail about it, but it is awful and there's child sexual abuse involved. So just want you to know, but it's hard to listen to, but this is a case that is active and ongoing right now. And if you can get through it, and then share the story or do something with it or sign the petition or write a letter or whatever you can do, it's very important.
Absolutely.
So just know that, you know, these episodes, these cases, like stuff can be done. We can move the needle. So if you can get through it, we encourage you to.
Yes. And we have some people to thank before we get into the episode. We want to thank Alex for suggesting this case. And thank you to Madison for writing it up.
Thank you. All right. So Grant Rhodes Huffines Solomon was born on June 13th, 2002 to Angie and Aaron Solomon. Angie grew up in a rough household, but despite the odds against her, she worked hard and she achieved a doctorate in pharmacy. She bought her own home in Tennessee, and she was really excited when she ended up reconnecting with an old friend from high school named Aaron Solomon. Aaron was a sports anchor for WSMV Channel 4 News in Nashville when they started dating in 2001. I don't remember him from the news. He was a sports anchor. I believe I don't know who he was, probably because I didn't watch sports. Like, I don't, you know?
Right, same.
Yeah, I don't remember him. But that's going to be a very important part of this case. And I don't know how, like, everybody watching this feels, but, like, your local news anchors are celebrities.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, like, I mean, when we went on Talk of the Town that day, and we got to meet Leland Statham.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, ah! Like, you're our weather guy. Like, we've been watching you since we were little. Like, it was so cool to, like, see him.
In person.
You see him on the TV all the time. Yeah. Exactly. Like, there is still something about, like, somebody who's on TV, even if it's not, like, national TV, that it feels like they're a celebrity.
Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I know like one of the moms of the kids that my boys go to school with, I'm pretty good friends with her now, but we were driving one day, she works at a bank, and we were driving down the road one day and I'm like, she's on a billboard. And I was just like, oh my gosh, that's so cool. And she just filmed a commercial for her bank. You know, it's local, but I'm like, you're famous. Like, oh my gosh. So it's like, it's a big deal. 6 weeks into their relationship, Angie discovered that she was pregnant with Aaron's child. And on June 13th, 2002, she gave birth to their first son, Grant. And Angie said she was entirely prepared to have this baby on her own, right? They'd only been together 6 weeks when she found out she was pregnant.
Yeah, that's like really throwing your relationship in the fast lane.
Yeah, she wasn't planning to marry him. She was planning to do what she needed to do as a single parent, right? But her parents pressured her into marrying Aaron so that Grant would have a father in his life. Okay. Can we just point out that I'm not saying that it's bad for a child to have two parents in their life, because of course not. It's not always good, though. Because when you've got a person like Aaron Solomon as the father for your child, I'd say you're better off without that.
100%. Yeah.
Oh, also, can we also say that a lot of the information from this is coming from Angie? She's done interviews. We'll link to, she did like a 3-hour interview with a YouTuber named Gray Hughes. I watched almost all of that where she tells her story in her words. There's other places that we get information from too, but I know that Aaron Solomon is very litigious. He's got good lawyers. So,
and he's just very well connected.
He's very well connected. And we live in this area. So, all of this is alleged, okay? This is alleged.
Yes. It's important to point that
and
out.
Opinion. So, we're not presenting things that cannot be confirmed as straight up fact. This is just the story as it's told. Grant was a great friend to those he knew. He loved fiercely. He did really well in school, but his passion was baseball. And he started playing at just 4 years old. And by the time he hit high school, he was an incredibly talented pitcher. And he was being recruited by Division I colleges to play baseball. And I don't know what that is, but I think that's good.
Yeah. I'm very like, proud of him, but it means almost nothing to me hearing those words. Yeah. I'm sure that's like a big, big, big deal. But to this stupid idiot that doesn't know anything about sports ball in any way, I'm like,
yeah,
cool.
I think that like the division things, I think the lower the number, the harder it is to get into and the more talented you have to be, you know, like I think a Division One school would be like, I know this is not baseball, but like your Alabama's of the football world and like stuff like that.
Well, I know like in major league baseball and then there's minor leagues and stuff like that. So it's like triple A, double A, right? Is that a thing?
Yeah, I think so. I know. We don't know. But he was super talented. He was a very, very good baseball player. 4 years later, in October of 2006, Angie gave birth to the couple's second child, which was a girl named Gracie. And Grant and Gracie were super close. Super close. And they're 4 years apart, right? So like, and they're brother and sister. So sometimes like my husband and his sister are 4 years apart. And they weren't really close growing up. You know, there was enough of an age gap where they didn't really like a lot of the same stuff at the same time. You know, it was also like a boy and a girl and just different interests and things like that. They weren't super close. They're a lot closer now. But Grant and Gracie were always like two peas in a pod. They were super, super close. And Grant saw himself as the protector of his sister and his mother, especially when things went sour between his parents. So the marriage started to go downhill after Grant was born. And they got married, I believe Angie said, 8 weeks into the relationship they got married. Because remember, she finds out 6 weeks in that she's pregnant. And it's only a couple weeks later, I think, that they got married. So they're married at 8 weeks and then 2 months into the relationship. And then Grant is born less than a year into the relationship, right at a year. And it's already gone downhill pretty bad, you know, at that point.
They don't know each other that well, right? It's not like they had this super established relationship. And then they've got this huge blessing, yet can be a stressor on a relationship, bringing a kid into it. So,
And for somebody who has anger issues and control issues and all of that, having a child can definitely, like you said, it can be a stressor, but it can bring out a lot of those problems and behaviors, I would say. And it reminds me a little bit of The Waitress when she gets pregnant. Yes. And Earl is like, don't you go loving that baby more than you love me. Like he kind of got he was already really controlling of her before she got pregnant. But she got pregnant and it kind of became one of those like, well, as long as you're not going to love the baby more than you love me, then, you know, like, I'm not saying that's what happened here. I'm just saying it reminds me of that a little bit.
I think that's bad.
It's not good. It is not good. Angie says that Aaron became aggressive. He started having violent outbursts during this time. He was manipulative and lied to get what he wanted. In 2008, Angie found out that Aaron had cheated on her with multiple women. She also believed that he was grooming several high school age girls and hiring sex workers. In 2011, Aaron told Angie that he'd quit his job at the news station, but there were rumors that he'd been fired after inappropriate content was found on his cell phone and computer. And then in 2014, Aaron began working as a financial advisor for Merrill Lynch. Do you not have to like have experience in that to work for fucking Merrill Lynch?
I don't even know. I mean, what we saw, and I'm not drawing a comparison personality wise, but Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I know, because I think if I had a boatload of money and I came to somebody and I was like, hello, Merrill Lynch, tell me what to do with my money. And they're like, here's this guy. Last year, he was a news anchor. Now he's your financial advisor. Like,
right.
I don't know. I would think.
Well, I mean, I don't have a lot of money, but I have some money. So maybe I'm qualified. I don't know.
Exactly. What is the qualification? To have some money? To have heard of money?
To have touched money in some capacity? Yeah.
I mean, and obviously, like, everybody's got to start somewhere or whatever. But I just, you know, Merrill Lynch is a big, that seems like it would be tough to just get a job there like that.
One would think. I don't know.
I don't know. Things continued to get worse in the Solomon household. Angie tried to get counseling, but she said that Aaron would not give her any privacy. He wouldn't leave her alone for an extended period of time. So At first, it was like he wanted to go with her to therapy, but he would like, she said he would like sit outside the room. He wanted to drive her there and back. He didn't want her going by herself. Eventually, he just started joining the sessions. Like, she wasn't even alone in therapy, you know, in the room. He was in there with her.
And that's very early from waitress. Like, he drove her everywhere.
Exactly. Yep. She ended up being diagnosed with PTSD, and they said that was likely from the significant abuse that she'd experienced as a child. And remember, her parents are a big part of this situation, too. So these are her abusers from her childhood that are playing a very, very big part in a lot of the stuff that we're going to see. And they also said PTSD from the abuse that she was currently experiencing in her marriage.
Mm-hmm.
She says that Aaron was diagnosed with narcissism and sex addiction.
I can see narcissism for sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. After Gracie was born, Aaron's anger towards Angie and Grant intensified. The outbursts and abuse in the Solomon household became more and more frequent. Grant, Gracie, and Angie were terrified. And whenever Angie thought about talking to the police, she said that Aaron threatened her that he would take the kids. She'd never see them again. And the only thing that she could think to do was to continue to document things with her therapist. And she did everything she could to protect her children. Unfortunately, Aaron's influence and power proved to be too much for Angie. So Aaron ended up filing for divorce, and he won full custody of the children. Grant and Gracie's worst nightmare had come true, and it would not be ending anytime soon.
On Monday, July 20th, 2020, 18-year-old Grant, who was living with a friend, drove an hour to the Ward Performance Institute in Gallatin, Tennessee. WPI was a baseball training facility, and Grant had a private lesson or private training session. His father had insisted on going to the session, and he was going to meet him there, which I am sure, I don't know, allegedly, whatever. I would feel like Grant was like, I don't want him to be there. But
right,
Aaron insisted, so. It was going to be the first time that Grant had been alone with his father in 2 years. At 8:44 a.m., Aaron called 911 and told them that Grant's truck had rolled him over him, dragged him, and pinned him down in a ditch. During the 911 call, Aaron said that there were three men there with him that were down in the ditch with Grant. And he said that the men told him that blood was coming out of Grant's mouth and that he might aspirate or choke on the blood. The 911 dispatcher gave directions and tried to get more information from Aaron. And after she felt like she'd got enough information, she suggested that someone go down into the ditch to be with Grant to talk to him. And she says that when Grant wakes up, he might be scared. And Aaron yells out, somebody talk to him. Why wouldn't that be him?
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? Because, and we'll, if you're watching on YouTube, Jen, our editor, is amazing. I'm sure she's already got a picture up of the scene, but WPI is at the top of a hill. The parking lot slopes downward.
Uh-huh.
And there's a ditch and a sidewalk off the street. This is where the truck ended up. It's like 60 feet down.
It's got a ton of very big rocks.
Very big rocks. Not boulders,
in this ditch.
But big rocks. These are not like little like gravel driveway rocks. These are big rocks.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron is standing at the top of the hill next to the building. He's 60 feet away from where his son is pinned under a vehicle while he's on the phone with 911. He never walks down there. He tells these three mystery guys, somebody talk to him.
Somebody check on him.
He never walks to the bottom of that hill to check on his son.
No.
To say any words to him, to see if he's breathing.
Right. Well, and we'll get into it, I'm sure, but I just wanted to point out something that we both have heard about from other podcasts who have covered it and things like that. But with it's Aaron and then three other men. So that's four total. They couldn't have tried to get the truck off of him in some way. Like, mm-hmm. Why didn't they try anything?
Right. Mm-hmm. I know, because you hear stories of if a small child is pinned under a vehicle or whatever, like, moms, because of adrenaline, will lift that motherfucker off of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Four men couldn't together lift the back of it up.
At least the front of it, try. Whatever. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, there was mm-hmm. no gumption or no I don't know. It just didn't seem pressing. Like Aaron was like, well, I don't know. And we're going to listen to the 911 call. So, okay. Mm-hmm. Police arrived and Aaron told them that he had been sitting in the driver's seat of his own truck. He was answering a work email on his phone. He saw Grant get out of the driver's seat of his white Toyota Tacoma. And then he walked to the back of the truck to get his baseball gear out. And then let's listen to the 911 call.
I'm trying.
Where's your emergency?
It's 1357 South Water Street. It's off 109. Please hurry.
You said 57?
Please hurry.
Okay, what's going on?
1357. My son's truck backed over him, and it's rolled over him and dragged him into the ditch, and it's on top of him. He's trapped under the truck, and somehow it drug him underneath it. Yes, my son is under it. I'm trying to call 911.
Okay, what's your name?
Oh my God. My name is Aaron Solomon.
And you said,
oh my God,
1357 South Water Avenue, right?
Yes.
How old is the male?
He's 18. He just turned 18 a couple weeks, about a month ago. It's my son. Oh my God. Oh my God. This is not good.
Is he awake? And
oh, please hurry.
To you?
I don't know. I don't think so. He's not alert, right? No, he's out and he's trapped. I got three guys here and he's trapped under the truck.
Okay.
Oh my God.
I understand, sir. Stay on the phone with me while we get somebody out there. What's your name?
Aaron Solomon.
All right, Aaron.
Huh?
What kind of vehicle is it?
It's a Toyota Tacoma, and the vehicle has to, he's underneath the vehicle.
Okay, I've got that.
And it's...
Okay, I've got that. What color is it?
It's a white truck. That's my son. It's somehow it backed up. Yeah. Yeah, I'm on with 911 right now. Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Was your son working on it?
No, he was just getting out of it. We're on an incline and I guess he didn't have it in park or something, or it wasn't engaged, or Oh my God. I can't believe
this. Is still not responding?
No.
And he's still under truck. No one can get out from under it.
We've got
units en route to you. I'm just asking you questions before we can update them, okay? Can you check and see if he's breathing?
Somebody's telling me that he's coming too.
Okay.
Maybe.
He is waking up.
Maybe.
Kind of keeping still. So he is
breathing? He can't move. I don't think he can move. I don't know.
Okay.
No, he can't move. He's trapped.
Okay. We got somebody in route. Now, when he wakes up, he might be scared.
I'm telling him, man.
Can somebody get down there and talk to him?
Yeah, somebody talk to him. Shit. There's blood. What, is he facing up or down? He's facing up. They said he may aspirate. We need to hurry. Oh, my God.
So does he have blood coming out of his mouth?
Yeah, there's blood coming out. Yeah, somehow it drug him down, I think. I don't know whether it wasn't in park or what, or if it didn't engage the brake, or it drug him underneath somehow.
Okay.
They said he's facing up.
Okay.
But he's bleeding from his mouth. So, Grant, turn your face to the side if you can, barely. But be careful.
Don't move him, okay?
We can't move him. We can't move him. Oh my God.
All right, he's in there. I'm gonna let you go, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
All right.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
So, I mean, you can definitely hear. And again, we have talked about it so many times, like till we're blue in the face, about how grief is expressed in different ways. Shock, fear, all the things, you can express them in many different ways. But there just doesn't seem, in my opinion, that he is that concerned. I don't know what the right word is. Like, you would think that he would be a little bit more upset sounding. He would be right there checking on him. He would, mm-hmm. it doesn't sound like that.
Or even like run inside and say, does anybody have a jack with them?
Oh, sure.
If yeah. I can't lift it up, let's get a jack and let's get it under there and pull him out from under this truck. Mm-hmm. He asks no questions. He asks for help from nobody except for these three mystery men that he's yelling to.
Yeah, exactly. So Aaron said he heard a loud crash. Then he looked to see Grant's truck back over him and down the hill into the grass ditch below the parking lot. First responders arrived to find Grant laying underneath his truck between two of the tires. None of the tires' weight was on Grant.
Between two of the tires. So he's essentially just laying underneath a truck.
Well, and
his weight is not on him.
But in the 911 call, he said he's pinned underneath the truck,
mm-hmm.
which is just not true.
It sounds like he could have grabbed his legs from under and just pulled him out.
Mm-hmm.
Easily.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, Aaron is on the phone. He's like, don't move him. Don't move him. And the dispatcher says the same thing. Like, don't move him. But still, it's like, I just don't understand why you just wouldn't check. I just don't. That's something that I will never, ever understand.
Mm-hmm.
The only blood was coming from the back of his head and he was unresponsive and barely breathing. Firefighters and EMS professionals did everything they could for Grant as they lifted and braced the truck to pull him out from underneath. They loaded him into an ambulance and began CPR en route. They reached the hospital, and shortly before 9:30 a.m., Grant Solomon was pronounced dead, and he had just turned 18 less than a month before this. So before Angie was able to get to the hospital, Aaron declined an autopsy and organ donation, and Angie said that when she finally got to the hospital, Aaron was sitting in a chair, absolutely no emotion on his face. He looked at her and said, quote, "We're going to be a family now." That sounds like a threat.
That sounds like a threat. And we need to give you a little more information now. Okay. So the Solomons by this point had not been a family for a very long time. Before Angie and Aaron divorced, before he took both children out of the home without telling Angie, Gracie had told her mother that her dad had been hurting her. So in January of 2013, Gracie was 5 years old and Grant was 11. I'm sorry, I said they were 4 years, they're 6 years apart. My bad. Math.
That's even more impressive that they were as close as they were.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know why I said four, but sorry.
Nobody expects you to be smart.
Okay, thank you. Good. As long as somebody's expecting it, that's better. Aaron had completely forbade anybody but him to bathe this little girl.
So weird.
Sounds like the Menendez situation. He was the only one that was ever allowed to give her a bath, ever, ever, ever. And so Angie started to notice that Gracie started getting really, really upset when it was bath time. She would beg them, please don't make me take a bath. Please don't make me take a bath. I don't need to have a bath. And then that day in January, it all came together. Gracie told Angie that Aaron was touching her and that he would put soap in her private parts and it really hurt. She gave more details to her mother about what was happening during bath time. And Angie said she confronted Aaron about the abuse. She asked him, is it true? And he said it was. But he told her the same thing that he always did. If you tell anybody, I'm going to take the children away and you are never going to see them again. And Angie believed that this was happening, but she also believed Aaron, his threat, and she at this time felt like, I need to be here to protect them. I've got to do what I can to stay close, kind of like, you know, keep your enemies closer sort of a situation.
Yeah.
Angie continued to see her therapist, making notes and plenty of documentation about what was going on in the household. She and her therapist were working to figure out a plan to get her and the children safely away from Aaron. It didn't seem like they had anywhere to go. And Gracie later confirmed what her mother said. Angie's parents knew about the abuse, but they continued to support Aaron. And supposedly his parents did too. So it just seems like, I don't know what to, I mean, again, this is just, you think about, he's a local news anchor. He's really well connected. And he's got this much power and influence in this area that people just believe him because.
Yeah.
And don't believe anything anybody else tells them about him. Imagine how much power you would have if you were somebody on a national stage. You know, it just, people will go to a lot of lengths for people that they perceive to be in power in any way, shape, or form. You know, I don't know.
Definitely. Yeah.
In May of 2013, an incident happened at the Solomon household that set things further down the path that would eventually lead to Grant's death. So at this time, Angie Grant and Gracie all slept together in the master bedroom and they would lock themselves in there. Like Aaron would have these, you know, violent outbursts. Angie said they would lock themselves in there, but they slept together in that room every night. Like they all were together. On May 9th, they had locked themselves in the bedroom. Angie said Aaron was pretty aggressive that night, but he coaxed Angie out of the room and into the bathroom with him. He ended up striking her on the side of the head, and then he started strangling her with the power cord from the hairdryer. Grant, who was 11 at the time, walked in. He was able to intervene, and he stopped his father from killing his mother. And Angie said in the interview that I saw with her with Gray Hughes, I think is his last name. Now I'm kind of not totally sure about that, but we'll link it. She said, you know, there are plenty of times that he had abused her in the past, but she said the air was different this night. The look in his eyes was different this night. Like she said, when she walked out to talk to him, the person that she saw sitting there was not the person that she knew. Mm-hmm. There was like something that had changed. She knew it was going to be bad, like really bad.
So scary.
And then, you know, Grant had to step in. He's only 11, you know? And like the other incidents, Angie did not report this to the police, still in fear for her life and her children's lives. However, Aaron did call 911 that night and he called Angie's parents and they came over to the house and they supported Aaron calling law enforcement and they told law enforcement that Angie was suicidal and she'd tried to hang herself with the blow dryer cord. So they take her to the hospital and she said that she didn't understand what was really happening until she got to the doctor or like she started talking to the doctor and she found out that Aaron had told them that she was attempting suicide. And she was like, hang on. That's not what happened. And she was like, I wasn't going to tell anybody what happened, but he was trying to make it look like that I was attempting suicide. And so she told the doctor, this is what's going on. This is what happened this night. And in the physician's medical chart from this visit with Angie, he did not believe that she was at risk of harming herself or anyone else. And in the chart, there's a part of the note that says, quote, the note indicated that the staff admitted her out of caution despite the confusing presentation of abuse versus suicide attempt. The note suggested that Dr. Solomon was likely in an abusive relationship with her husband. When referencing the information he received from Angie's therapist, the doctor wrote, quote, the plan was to move Dr. Solomon out of the house safely and obtain a divorce. The chart indicated that Dr. Solomon did not appear to have signs of depression and she was not voicing suicidal ideation. So we've got records from the therapist. We have records from the doctor. Mm-hmm. Saying, I don't believe that this was a suicide attempt. And we've got records from the therapist confirming that there's abuse in the household.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that that's what
Angie is
presented
saying
to the therapist.
Right.
But Aaron is really holding strong on this is what has happened.
Well, and he's got people to back him up.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know.
Exactly.
But they're backing him.
In the hospital discharge summary, it was noted that, quote, the patient was telling the truth about the situation and that she was in a risky situation with her husband, who appeared to possibly be volatile and violent, although this was uncertain. The patient's parents also appeared to be unreliable sources of information.
How sad for Angie. That is so sad.
Can you imagine like how alone you would feel? Like, it's already very isolating to experience abuse like that. But for your parents to take the side of the person that is hurting you and your children,
I cannot even nobody. Imagine.
And because where can she go? You know, like,
I don't understand it either. Like, why? Why did they take it? Why?
I don't know. And it, you know, it goes back to these people were very abusive to her entire life, you know? So it's just, she just didn't have anybody.
And so that's sad.
Really sad.
And I mean, not to mention the fact that her parents really pushed for them to get married in the first place, even though they had known each other. Well, they knew each other for a long time, but they had been dating for the 6 weeks or 8 weeks, whenever it happened. Right. Like,
yeah. And you can know somebody a long ass time and not know everything about them.
Well, absolutely true. Yes.
You know, like, of course, if there are people in your life that are abusive to their spouses or significant others, like, we're not going to see that because we're not behind closed doors with them.
Right.
They're able to control that anger and aggression when other people are around, mm-hmm. which is very interesting because a lot of times they say, well, I just can't help it. You know, I just get so angry and I blow up. Well, you're able to temper that when other people are around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That kind of feels like you can control it, though.
A little bit. Kind of feels that way. Yeah. The doctor determined that Angie had never expressed thoughts of hurting herself, and she had never attempted to do so. So they released her from the hospital. Angie left the hospital on May 11th. She went home to the house that she still shared with Aaron. And when she got home, she expected everybody would be there. But the house was empty. Aaron, Grant, and Gracie were gone.
Oh, gosh.
Hey, y'all. You know how Tori is basically a Spice Girl and dresses the cutest and has the best makeup and hair in the whole world? Or like how I can't stop buying stuff on Amazon, mostly for my kids? Well, we get asked all the time, where does Tori get her clothes and makeup? And what stuff am I constantly overbuying to make mom and home life easier? So we made a links page. Head over to killerqueenspodcast.com/links and scroll down to shop our style or our Amazon faves. Here you'll find all the posts you can shop with our unique links to each item, as well as our Amazon storefront where we have lists like 90s finds. This is curated by Tori with all the best 90s stuff like Tamagotchis and My Little Ponies, my back to school must-haves list, gift ideas for kiddos that I love, podcast essentials if you ever want to start your own show, and more. And we add to it all the time. Now, to be totally honest, we do make a commission if you use these links to make a purchase, and we always appreciate everything you do to keep the lights on over here. So be sure to head to killerqueenspodcast.com/links and scroll down to shop our style or our Amazon faves to totally twin with us. We love you guys to the moon, and we cannot wait to share all of our style and life faves with you.
So Angie had no idea where her children were. She called Aaron, she called her parents, she called his parents over and over and over again, but there was no response. She hoped that because May 12th was Mother's Day, Aaron would bring the kids home, but he did not. Instead, he called 911 to report that Angie was suicidal again. Officers arrived on scene and, after talking to Angie, determined that she was no threat to herself or to others. Happy Mother's Day to you.
I know. And she said, she's like, I'm in the house. There's like a knock on the door, police, whatever. She opens the door and they're like, you know, we're here to check on you because suicidal ideation or whatever. And she said, she literally goes, again? Like, I just got home from this. Like, are you serious? So she went and got some of the paperwork from the hospital where the doctor had written not suicidal. And they were like, okay, well, happy Mother's Day, ma'am. Like,
At the recommendation of the doctor who she'd seen in the emergency room on her visit, Angie had filed for a restraining order against Aaron. And this seemed like it was the one time that Angie wanted to see Aaron. She wanted to know where her kids were. And she called the police to report that Aaron had left the home with her kids and that she still had no idea where they were. Reportedly, the officers didn't seem to be too concerned. On the 18th of May, Angie went to a friend who was a lawyer, hoping to find out what she had, like what rights she had at this point, what she can do about all of this. So after digging, they found out some shocking news. While she'd been in the hospital, Aaron had filed for divorce as well as for an order of protection for him and the kids from her, and he was granted full custody.
Like, she filed for that order of protection and it was granted, but she tried to include the children in it and the judge removed them from it. It was just for her. They wouldn't allow that. But they allowed him to file for an order of protection and include the children. And he, at this point, he's doing everything that he can to make her appear as an unfit mother. That's right. His goal, according to Angie.
He's, if that's what he was trying to do, which it all checks to me, he's doing a pretty damn good job.
Exactly. And you know, Angie said he had been telling me for years, I'm going to take the kids away from you. I'm going to make it so that you never see those children again. And then at this point, he makes good on that promise.
Yeah, exactly. Living with Aaron was a nightmare for Gracie and Grant. They were constantly terrified. Aaron regulated everything they did, what they ate, when they went to the bathroom, who they hung out with, literally everything. And the kids told their friends and Angie that they were on a strict diet. Grant's friend saw a noticeable change in him. He had lost 25 pounds within the first year of living with his father. And Gracie had huge dark bags underneath both eyes.
Very sad. She's a little girl. And I mean, like, huge dark bags. That's not normal. And he should not be losing 25 pounds. He's a growing boy. Like,
I'm sure he did not have it to lose in the first place, but.
Well, and that's what makes me really, the system, the people in place that are supposed to be mandatory reporters, doctors, judges, teachers, all of these people could not have failed these children anymore if they had even tried harder. You know what I mean?
Well, and we're going to get into some real bullshit.
You've got a teenage boy who's lost 25 pounds. And like you said, he was not on a weight loss plan for any reason. He's an athlete who's in peak physical shape, I would think. He doesn't need to lose 25 pounds. He's not a wrestler who's cutting weight.
No.
Or whatever.
Right.
He's losing 25 pounds because he was, I think they said that he was only allowed to eat meat and vegetables. He was not allowed anything else.
Like carbs or anything like that.
Yeah. He had a very strict diet that he was placed on. Somebody should have noticed that. Did they not go to the doctor at any time during that year? Like, don't you have to have physicals to play sports and stuff like that? Nobody noticed the significant weight loss and said, hey, this isn't right.
Right. I don't know.
You know?
Yeah, I have no idea. But I mean, like you said, it's just, they've been failed for sure. On May 26, 2013, Aaron returned home to the home with both kids and Angie's parents. And Angie said that Aaron essentially told her that if she, quote unquote, behaved, he and the kids would stay. And just a day later, Aaron took Angie and Grant to Dunkin' Donuts, telling them that they were just grabbing some donuts for their mom. When they realized that Aaron was taking them back to his house, Grant tried to jump out of the moving car and Aaron yanked him back by the wrist.
And he thought his wrist was broken.
I mean, you got to yank him hard. Like, I would imagine that the word yank infers that it's a hard, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's just, it's poor kids.
And Grant trying to do anything that he can to get out of that situation. He's like, I will literally jump out of a moving car. On June 21st, Angie and Aaron appeared before a judge about their divorce hearing. Both Angie's father and sister made statements in Aaron's favor. Medical experts testified in Angie's defense, insisting that Angie was not suicidal. She was a victim of domestic violence. Despite seemingly no evidence to indicate that Angie was an unfit mother, Judge Philip E. Smith ruled in favor of Aaron, leaving him with full custody of Gracie and Grant. All of the judges in this case are, I hate them. Judge Smith also ordered a full mental health exam before she was allowed to have any contact with her kids. The doctor returned with a report stating that he agreed with the other doctors that had evaluated Angie that she was a great mother. And Judge Smith later reportedly dismissed this report.
Yeah, because this, like, she's met with other people that are doctors of her choosing. This was a doctor of their choosing. The judge and Aaron and whatever. And this doctor agreed. She's not an unfit mother. She's a great mother. She's being abused. And they're like, well, you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Forget that.
What did Aaron have that was so... I don't get it. Is it money? Is it...
Right.
I don't know.
What is it that he's... Or is it just that, like, good old boys, like, oh, I know him through this and that and whatever, and I'm going to do what I can to protect... That it just doesn't make any sense.
And it's so frustrating. So frustrating to talk about and to know that it happened, right? Like, just not even just talking about it. But it was October of 2013, and Angie hadn't seen her kids since June 21st. Gracie later said that her father told them that their mother was dead, and they believed him. Finally, in February of 2014, Aaron allows Angie to see the kids. Angie could see how scared her children were and how much they'd physically changed since living with their father. The weight loss, the bags under Gracie's eyes, but unfortunately there was nothing that she could do.
And Angie said at that time she had been, you know, talking to people that she knew, and they said, listen, you need to move really close to Aaron and he will use you as a babysitter. If you move close by to him, he will begin to use you as a babysitter. And she was like, and he did. That's what ended up happening. And she said that every time the kids would come to her house, again, they had to behave. They had to play the game, right? So they all had to talk about this and say, okay, when you go back to him, you can't cry and ask to stay. You just got to go and act like you want to go. She started baking cookies and sending them home for Aaron. Like, just doing whatever she could. Yeah. And then they said, you know, you keep doing that and eventually he's going to let them stay with you, stay the night with you. And he did. Eventually he started using her for overnights and things like that. And the kids would end up spending weeks at her house sometimes because he's, I don't know, doing whatever he's doing. But on paper, he had custody. So during this time, even though he's allowing them to go spend the night with her and whatever, there was like one time where he let them stay with her, agreed that they could stay another few nights or whatever. And then he called the police and said that she'd kidnapped them.
See, so anything to make her look terrible.
She says, but I've got the, because she said they always communicated via text message, which was Aaron's rule, which is actually very beneficial for Angie, right? Because she has all these screenshots. But she said, I've got the text right here that shows. He said they could stay here. Like, this is not me kidnapping them. And they said, yeah, but you don't have a custody order that says that. You're in violation of the custody order. And that's what we're here to enforce.
That is so annoying. Hey y'all, did you know that we release an update all about us and what we're up to each week on our Patreon? It's called Tea to the Fourth Power Y, which is some time to talk to you, a nod to Not Another Teen Movie. And it's where we just gal pal with you about life, what we're watching, our love for Cracker Barrel Italian dressing. I mean, honestly, the sky's the limit.
You never know what you're going to get, really. Mm-hmm. If you want to catch an episode without being a patron, you are in luck. Just head over to killerqueens.link/TTTTY, okay, time to talk to you, 4 T's and a Y, and you'll get to hear a full episode for free. And you can get every single regular release episode ad-free for as little as $3 a month. That's less than half the price of the coffee I get at Starbucks, so.
I know, that's crazy.
I know, what a deal.
Mm-hmm. And for $10 a month, you get all that plus our other two Patreon-exclusive shows, Murder Mixtapes, which is a full bonus case each week. Recent cases are Tara Grinstead, Hannah Cornelius, and New York Body Snatchers, just to name a few.
And you also get our other Patreon-exclusive show, Doc Jams, which is where we cover true crime documentaries episode by episode. We've done Don't Fuck with Cats. We've done Crime Scene on Netflix. They have Cecil Hotel and Times Square Killer. We've done The Jinx. We've done so many more. So be sure to head to killerqueens.link/TTTY
To get your free episode and hundreds more episodes to download right now and binge when you become a member of our Patreon community. In November of 2014, Aaron was only letting Angie see the children during their sporting events. On the 18th, while sitting in a basketball game, 8-year-old Gracie told her mom that her father was still sexually abusing her. She detailed how he'd bathe her. I mean, she's 8 years old. She doesn't need to be bathed every time, right? Mm-mm. Like,
I wouldn't think so, no.
My 7-year-old, he will tell me, hey, mom, I'm going to go ahead and take my shower. And he does it all by himself. Like, he doesn't need super help. He might stay in there way too long playing with toys and use all the hot water, but he can do it by himself.
Yeah.
Gracie says he's still putting soap in her private parts. It really hurts. It stings. All these things. So Angie did the only thing that she could think of, knowing that Aaron would deny Gracie's accusation. She recorded parts of her conversation with Gracie on her phone to add to the documentation that she was keeping about Aaron. And Aaron, of course, did not allow the children to see their mother for Christmas, which devastated them. In March of 2015, Gracie managed to FaceTime her mother without Aaron knowing, and she showed her bruises that she had on her inner thighs. And you can see these pictures. Angie took screenshots of this FaceTime. You can see the pictures of Gracie's thighs, and they're large bruises, and they're significant bruises. I mean, you can see it. And she said, but I don't know where they came from. I have all these bruises on my legs, but I don't know where they came from. She also told her mom that there were times at home where she'd get really sleepy for no reason, just super, super sleepy. She'd fall asleep. She'd wake up some period of time later in her father's bed, but she would have no idea what happened in between. But she would have pain in places. Aaron ended up telling Gracie that the bruises on her thighs were from a bathing suit that gave her a rash.
Now, okay.
Yes, let's talk about where a bathing suit touches your skin.
And also that it's absurd. Like, that there's absolutely no way that that could even, it's a lie, obviously, but there's no way that that could even be true. But this is in March. And I'm not saying the only time the bruises appeared there or were present was in March, but who's going swimming in March? Nobody.
Not in Tennessee. Yeah, not in Tennessee. Even if you have a pool at your house, even if it's heated, there's snow on the ground sometimes in March.
Yeah.
Or it's cold enough it could snow.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're not swimming in March. Maybe no. A hot tub, I don't know. But the bruises are, I don't know if I can, this case just makes me so mad, but the bruises on her, like, inner thighs are, like, down here. A bathing suit, you know, is going to hit kind of like where underwear does. That's not going to give you a rash down here.
Right, like the middle inner part of your thigh.
Yeah, that just doesn't make any sense. Like, and of course it doesn't make any sense. And a lot of times, you know, kids will accept, you know, what is, I mean, because they're learning. So they're learning things from their parents and they're like, hey, where did this come from? And you're like, oh, probably your bathing suit. Okay. You know?
Yeah.
Like, they don't know any better.
So it's just so scary too, that she was waking up in her dad's bed, which is somewhere that she, as far as I can tell, I don't know for a fact, but it seems like a place that she does not feel safe.
No. No.
And exactly. Mysteriously just getting sleepy and then just waking up somewhere else. That's terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. At some point before this, Aaron had an aunt that had passed away and he inherited a trust from her. So he started getting disbursements of that in over $100,000 a month for these payments during the time that it paid out.
Jeez Louise.
However, he went ahead and filed a report in April of 2015 against Angie for her not paying child support. Now, one thing that I do know that we've learned through, you know, our parents and everything, I don't know if child support is the same way, but when alimony used to be a big thing, it's like less frequent now, I guess. Alimony was never based on whether or not the party who received it needed it. It was based on whether the party that was paying it could pay it or not.
Could pay it, yeah.
It's their ability, not their need. That doesn't matter. I'm assuming child support is the same way. He's got custody. He doesn't need the money, but if she's working, then she can pay it. So I think that's the way the law is. But of course, obviously he's just being vindictive, right?
Yeah.
Like, he knows he has plenty of money. He doesn't need that from her, but this is a way he can go after her. And she was put in jail for the weekend over this. And it just felt like nobody was listening. You know, they tell everybody this is what's going on and nobody listened. Throughout the next 3 years, Angie and the kids did everything they could to keep Aaron happy, hoping that they would not be the target of Aaron's next violent outburst.
Angie began telling law enforcement about the abuse that her and her kids were suffering. She told several people at the school, or at the kids' private Christian school, Grace Christian Academy, and their associated church, Grace Chapel, that she believed Aaron was messaging young girls and talking to them inappropriately. Unfortunately, it didn't seem as though anybody was going to do anything further about it. Anyway, let's talk about something else. Don't bring that up. There are multiple emails and communications showing that Angie reached out to law enforcement. There is a podcast. What is it called?
I forget what the podcast is called, but the episode, it's on YouTube too, because they've got a lot of images and things like that. The episode is called Southern Injustice about this case, but it's two retired law enforcement people.
Officers, yes.
Officers, yeah. That we can link that too. They've got some really good information on the accident, kind of reconstruction and stuff like that.
Well,
but they are clear. They're Bostonian. Obviously from Boston. Yeah,
Boston
law enforcement.
Yes, and something
Such
else
a
I can't remember
fun accent.
I know. Oh, I saw it, like that kind of stuff. Yeah,
yeah.
As soon as I heard the first mention of that, I was like, oh yeah, like this
oh,
is
yeah.
the accent. There are multiple emails and communications showing that Angie reached out to law enforcement, church, and school officials about her concerns for Aaron's behavior and the safety of herself and the children. And there's even evidence showing that Grant and Gracie tried to tell people at school what was happening. There's even a recording of two female school officials from Grace Christian Academy discussing Gracie's alleged or allegations with the other or with one another. They both voiced their concern that Gracie wasn't thinking about the future, just the present. They were concerned with how many people she was telling and how they could best, quote, contain the situation.
And they were telling her, too, according to Gracie, that they were saying that they're trying to save her reputation, that you keep talking about this and that doesn't look good for you. Mm-mm. And it's going to make your reputation kind of soured. And, it, you know, you just need to not talk about it anymore. Just don't talk about it. It makes you look bad to boys. It makes you look bad to
your peers,
everybody around
right?
you. Yeah.
I cannot believe it. I cannot believe that that is the approach that they took with this. But
right.
In July of 2018, Grant and Gracie had forensics interviews done by a social worker from the Davis House Child Advocacy Center and Tamika Sanders, a detective with the Williamson County Sheriff's Office. And Sanders opened an investigation when she realized that Gracie was being sexually abused. After the interviews, Sanders contacted the Department of Children's Services, so DCS, who told her not to investigate the situation any further, and Sanders listened to DCS. Why?
Why are we not asking any questions? Why should I not investigate this when there's evidence of
sexual
abuse of a child?
Yeah, sexual abuse. Exactly.
Like, okay, fine. You told me to stop. I'll stop.
I have no idea. I literally do not have any idea.
No. Awful.
In August of 2018, Grant and Gracie ran away from Aaron, but he quickly called the police. And once officers found them, he requested that the police bring them back home in order to scare them. On the weekend of August 17th and 18th, Grant had a baseball tournament out of state in North Carolina. Aaron drove Gracie, now 11, and Grant, who was 16, to North Carolina. While Grant stayed with his team, Gracie and Aaron had to drive back to Tennessee because Angie had filed for emergency custody, citing neglect and the abuse of the children. Gracie made a video testimony in which she told them how, on the night prior, on the way back from North Carolina, her father booked them a hotel room with one bed. She explained in detail to the court how her father had raped her that night, and the judge refused to watch the video. Didn't want to watch it. Refused. Straight up refused. And since Grant was still at his tournament, he wrote a letter to be read in court describing the abuse he and his sister suffered at the hands of his father. He said that Aaron restricted his food and humiliated him, constantly calling him fat. Grant wrote how Aaron would say terrible things about their mother, constantly trying to turn them against her. And Grant said that they were terrified every minute they had to spend with their father, and all they wanted to do was be back with their mom. And despite the disgusting amount of evidence detailing Aaron's abuse and behavior, the judge dismissed the motion, saying that Angie had filed it without merit.
But listen to this.
She also ruled that Angie was unable to file any further civil lawsuits against Aaron for 6 years.
Okay. I don't know every single law in the state of Tennessee, but this includes any motions. Like the judge ruled Angie can't file anything, which means she can't file any petitions to get the kids back. She can't file anything saying he's, you know, being abusive and blah, 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 all this stuff. She can't file any of that for 6 years. And in her interview with Gray Hughes, like, he's like, can you even do that? Like, can you bar someone from somebody? And she's like, it's not constitutional, I would think. Like, you know, so again, I don't know every single law in the state of Tennessee, but I don't know that that's a thing. I've never heard of that happening before.
I haven't either, honestly. But it's just so outrageous to me that Aaron can do whatever the fuck he wants to do. He can accuse her of doing all kinds of stuff. He can take her to court for whatever he wants to. Everybody is like, man, yep, I feel sorry for that guy. He's had a really rough time with his crazy bitch of a wife.
Exactly.
But with absolutely no evidence to support it. She's
no
got
evidence to support it.
She's got all the evidence, and everybody's like, oh my God, this one. Like, she's always making shit up about him.
She's so crazy. Gosh.
And like, this is like, I'm speculating. I don't know if that's actually what happened or what people are thinking, but that's how it feels to me. And I'm like,
And it feels very like 1930s, where you could like have your wife committed for making you a bad meal, or if she was just, you know, she was upset about something
because, yeah,
because now she's hysterical and
yeah,
because there's no, again, like you said, there's no evidence of this. And in fact, physicians, psychologists, mental health professionals, everybody who has interviewed her, the court ordered a mental health evaluation on her. And it found that she's not suicidal, that she's not an unfit mother. He tried to go down the road of she's, you know, got a drug addiction and that makes her an unfit mother. Like, he went through all these avenues and every single one of those was proven by the professionals that the court uses to determine these things that they were not true. But Aaron just says she tried to kill herself.
And they believe him.
And I need full custody. Yeah. Like,
I will never understand it.
No.
And Gracie was absolutely petrified of her father, but she had to drive back with him to North Carolina to pick up Grant.
You guys, this is going to be a two-parter. I suspected it. We didn't initially plan it as a two-parter, but like, this is such an involved case because we have so many things to go through with just the accident itself. So this is the end of part one.
Yes.
Because we have to shut up now. So if you want part two, you want to hear all the inconsistencies, you want to know all the things. If you're a patron, you've already got it waiting for you. It's locked and loaded, ready to go. If you're not a patron, ain't no thing. You'll just get it next week.
Yeah, that's totally fine.
Either way, you're going to get part two.
Yes.
Just next week with ads, right now without ads.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but thank you guys for hanging out with us. We love you and we'll catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Connect with us on Instagram or Facebook to continue the conversation.
Thanks for listening and we will meet you back here next week.
Bye.
The theme song for the show is created and composed by Stephen Toby. You can find more of Stephen's work on SoundCloud. Our logo was created by Sloan Williams of Sophisticated Crayon. You can find more of her work on Etsy. Visit us at killerqueenspodcast.com for merch and other info about the show.